The following are excerpts from An Essay on Beatification, Canonization, and the Processes of the Congregation of Rites, also written by Father Faber. We have chosen excerpts from this essay because in the footnote of A Taste for Reading Considered Helpful in the Spiritual Life, it suggested to look to this essay for examples of how reading the lives of the saints is especially helpful to salvation. There is hardly any study, and certainly no kind of spiritual reading, which calls for more cautious jealousy and scholar-like discretion than the lives of the saints. And if it be actually impossible in any particular instance to avoid erring in one of two extremes, it is better to be too backward than too forward in the matter before us. When we pass the boundaries of ordinary life and enter a land of marvels and strange actions, we must remember that we are on the very ground where delusion and counterfeit work is to be looked for, and we must be careful not to let either general enthusiasm or particular devotion to a favorite saint or a natural tendency to give in to the spirit and genius of romance allure us for one instant from the analogy of the faith. It is a comparatively trifling mistake to deal out too scanty an allowance for belief to the miraculous gifts with which Almighty God may have favored one of his chosen servants and vessels of election. But to be beguiled into false devotions or immoderate feelings, to confound the possible with the probable with the certain, and even the certain with that is matter of faith, is a far more serious affair, essentially injurious to our best spiritual interests, and yet which very easily comes of confounding the admirable with the imitatable in the lives of the saints. Indiscreet corporal penances, peculiar observances of interior mortification, breeding scruples because unsuited to us, a morbid hankering after raptures, ecstasies, and other supernatural gifts, a conceited fancy, perhaps one of the most perilous of delusions, that we are being raised to the highest degrees of mental prayers, affected singularities in good works, disregard and disesteem of our director, as though he misunderstood what God is doing in our souls. These are some of the errors into which an undiscerning study of the lives of the saints has led and may lead, and the simple enumeration of them is a sufficient condemnation. What has happened in Catholic countries may occur, though it be less likely, even where the cold atmosphere of heresy does so much to chill anything like devotional excess. But, so the very number and danger of the errors into which hagiology may lead, will give us some idea of the value of it as a means of spiritual advancement, and of the consequent dread of it felt by the spirits of evil. That which cannot be abused is good for nothing, said the acute Niebuhr, of his bold canons for interpreting the legends of primitive history, and it would argue a great want of moderation as well of discriminating judgment to set aside the study of the saints' lives altogether because of the dangers into which an ill-guided and incautious imitation might lead. An intolerant impatience is trying to dispense with what lays under the troublesome obligations of calmness, prudence, and discretion is generally a symptom of rash judgment, a prejudice greatly to be distrusted, and of an irritable impetuosity which would be very unbecoming in one who should put forward his opinion for others to follow, or who should venture to wield the weapons of spiritual direction. We should be aware as much of this unsafe precipitation as of a blind, unintelligent credulity, or an imperious desire to force others to believe and like as much as we may have happened to believe and like ourselves. All the saints and spiritual writers have agreed in no one point so signally as in recommending the perusal of saints' biographies. The lives of the saints, the gospel in practice as he called them, were the constant study of St. Alphonsus Liguori during the period of his conversion, at the time when he left the bar and vowed to be an oratorian. To the lives of the saints read upon his sickbed by the wounded Ignatius, the Church owes, through the mercy of God, the conversion of that wonderful man, and the incalculable fruits of his conversion in the labors of his glorious and persecuted society. The story which St. Augustine tells us in his Confessions of the two courtiers of Theodosius, converted all at once by the marvelous life of St. Anthony, is too well known to be repeated here. And we read of the blessed John Colombino that he led a worldly, covetous, and irreligious life, but that one day, as his quaint old chronicler describes it, he went home from the warehouse more hungry than usual, and because his dinner was a little delayed, he got out of temper and abused both his wife and his servant, saying he was in a hurry to go back to his counting-house. "You have too much money and spend too little, John," said his wife. "Why are you putting yourself out in this way? While I'm getting things ready, take this book and read a little." So saying, she gave him a volume containing some lives of saints. Giovanni, somewhat nettled, took the book and threw it into the middle of the room, saying, "You think of nothing but legends. I have the warehouse to go to." Presently, however, his conscience began to prick him. He took the book from the ground, and opening it, lighted upon the life of St. Mary of Egypt. Shortly afterwards, his wife called him to dinner. "Wait a while," replied Giovanni, forgetting his hunger, and on he went. The legend was long, but as his old biographer observes, there was a celestial melody in it. Time sped. His wife looked at him. Giovanni was still reading, and what was more, grace was working. There was conversion in the legend of the penitent of Egypt. The story softened his heart. It was his thought by day and his dream by night. The churlish Giovanni began to give alms, and always just double of what was asked of him. And to that reading was owing the outburst of the love of God which the blessed Giovanni spread with his poor sheep of Jesus, the Gesuati, from one end of Italy to the other, from the Pope down to the swineherd of Siena. It would be endless to multiply instances where grace has worked through the study of the lives of the saints. Probably there are few of our readers who have not experienced it themselves. Let us content ourselves by casting a glance at the last day of St. Philip Neri's life, for he, if anyone, can give us safe instruction in the matter. On the morning of Corpus Christi, the day on which God so suddenly took him to his reward, when the Holy Father had heard the confession of his favorite, Francesco della Molera, he said to him, "Francesco, remember that for the future you always come to the oratory to hear the sermons, and do not forget to read spiritual books, especially the lives of the saints." Aware of his approaching end, he gave his penitents that morning spiritual instructions with an unusual tenderness mingled with solemnity, and he was particularly urgent about three things: the frequentation of the sacraments, the attending of sermons, and the reading of the lives of the saints. After he said Vespers in Compline, he spent the afternoon partly in receiving visits, and partly in hearing the lives of the saints read to him. And he had the life of St. Bernardino of Siena, that eloquent lover of Mary, read to him twice over. Such were the practice and counsel of a saint just as he himself was about to enter into glory. Indeed, to discard ourselves or discourage in others the reading of the lives of the saints would apparently betoken some disrespect to the Church, for by even the lowest of her sanctions, such as the steps preparatory to the signatura commissionis, she at least calls the attention of her children to the holy men upon whose lives apostolical processes have been or are about to be formed, or who by the custom of the congregation of rites are entitled to the name of venerable, and by the decree of canonization, the cultus of the saint permitted in beatification is made a precept to the universal Church. These clearly are the models she puts before us to admire and imitate, these alone of our fellow exiles in this vale of tears. Does she authoritatively pronounce to be enjoying the beatific vision? These are the marked followers of the Lamb, whom the Church calls by name that we may know them, and copy their virtues as well as venerate their relics. And it is worth observing that hardly ever are mass and office granted to the nameless martyrs or sancti baptisi, whose bodies are extracted from the catacombs. So strongly does the idea of imitation come out in all that regards the cult of the saints. The practice and advices of the saints themselves, recorded facts, the finger of the church, the universal teaching of spiritual writers, all unite in pointing out the study of the lives of the saints as a great means of grace and an almost necessary help to advancement in virtue. We must not, however, forget the distinction between what is admirable and what is imitatable in these records of sanctity, for to lose sight of this distinction would be most dangerous. Read the histories and lives of the saints, says St. Francis of Sales in his Introduction to the Devout Life, in which, as in a looking-glass, you may behold the portraiture of a Christian life and accommodate their actions to your state of life. 4. Although several actions of the saint cannot absolutely be imitated by such as live in the midst of the world, yet they may be in some degree followed. For example, you may imitate the solitude of St. Paul the First Hermit in your spiritual and real retirements, and the extreme poverty of St. Francis by the practices of poverty, and so of the rest. It is true, there are some of their histories that give more life for the conduct of our lives than others, such as the life of the Blessed Mother Teresa, the lives of the first Jesuits, that of St. Charles Borromeo, St. Louis, St. Bernard, the Chronicles of St. Francis, and several others. There are others, again, which contain more matter of admiration than imitation, as the life of St. Mary of Egypt, St. Simon Stylites, and the two St. Catherines of Siena and Genoa, of St. Angela and the such-like, which nevertheless fail not in general to give us a great relish for the love of God. End quote. This is a very remarkable passage to come from such a writer as St. Francis, and illustrates very well the practical turn of his mind. He would have even the extraordinary actions of the saints, such as the utter solitude of Paul and the utter poverty of Francis, copied by us in our measure and by accommodation, and few perhaps less versed in spiritual direction would have mentioned the Chronicles of St. Francis as among the imitatable biographies. Indeed, the extreme difficulty of drawing the line between the lives imitatable and the lives admirable is very significant. Father Quadrapani, the Barnabite, good-humoredly laughing at the ambitious beginners who envy St. Joseph of Cupertino his marvelous flights in the air, lays great stress on the same distinction, and gives the same advice in his beautiful documents for tranquilizing the scrupulous. Yet, even the life of St. Mary of Egypt, ranked by St. Francis among the admirable rather than the imitatable lives, was the frequent study of the wise and practical St. Philip Neri, as we have just seen, was the means of the blessed Colombino's conversion from the stingy worldliness of a hard-hearted tradesman. We must therefore, while giving scope to a right and proper caution and criticism, repress with equal jealousy imprudent fears, uncritical censures, and cold suspicions. We must take the middle road of kindly and intelligent moderation and endeavor to ascertain for ourselves safe canons by the aid of which we shall be enabled to maintain this middle ground against both coldness and credulity.